It starts in November. Christmas catch-up. Let's do diaries. Oh, that clashes with my work due. That's the day of the nativity. We're booked to see Santa. We're out picking a tree. There's in-laws to visit, pantomimes to see. I've got to write 1,000 Christmas cards. Until somehow, we're here. Four friends having our Costa Christmas catch-up. We should do this more often.
Get together this Christmas around the festive Nutcracker range at Costa. Costa Coffee.
The Hawks have played 32 games this season.
Yes.
In 31 of them, they've either led, tied, or trailing by one in the third period in every game. So they have been competitive. This isn't games over by the second period. This is like going down to the wire, and the Hawks are finding ways to lose and not pick up points.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Drop in the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. I'm flying solo. My co-host, Tim, only likes the Boston Bruins, so he didn't want to come on our Chicago Blackhawks podcast. But we got a beautiful fill-in. Some would say an upgrade. Not me, but some would. We have my old friend, Charlie Romeliotis, coming from Chicago, greater Chicago area. Charlie, are you still living with your brother? How's life treating you in Chicago?
I'm solo now. He actually got engaged the summer, and so he moved out. Yeah, so now I have this beautiful office. Check out the background. I mean, isn't this just beautiful, John?
Gorgeous. If you don't watch us on YouTube, you're missing out, because there's a certain design aesthetic that you can only find in Chicago. And I don't want to spoil it, but check it out. It's beautiful. Did you come up with that yourself?
Yeah, I did. I did. By the way, you said you were running the show now, so you're without your co-host. Do you remember the time when I was hosting the Hawkcast with me and you sent us to commercial break because you wanted to feel what it felt like to be a host? So yeah. I think this is right up your alley. This is totally, you look like you're in a comfort zone. I feel like I'm the one playing off you now. So this is good.
It's nice because the less you talk, I found the better, because the ratings would always go down when you would talk for too long. And that's just stats. Like, that's something they track. But it's nice to have you on. It's a good time because Chicago is going through changes. Yeah. You come into this season, you know, expectations, this and that. But they're showing signs of improvement. And we were talking before we come on the show about, you know, this team is better than their record shows. But before we get into that, let's just talk about how we got here, what's happened in Chicago this year, because they were a hot pick, Charlie. And you and I, we worked together last year dozens of times. We did Hawkscast. We did the games on NBC, and Charlie kept his job and I got fired. It's fine. It's fine. No. I'm okay with it. You know, I still haven't gotten over it, but I'm going to. I had to, you know, readjust my spending, but that's just the way life goes. But last year, I feel like we came into the year and expectations were very low. It was just, okay, we got Bedard in the lottery. We're going to try to insulate this kid. It didn't happen because of all the injuries. But overall, I feel like even though the win-loss record last year wasn't there, it was a successful year. Do you get that sense even though they didn't win?
Yeah. So first off, I thought we were going to come on and I was going to ask you about a chicken coop update, because that was the hot, you know, topic time we would do our okay.
I very much. All right. I'll give you the update before we get in Chicago.
Okay, so let's do it.
We've had some tragic, like, events happen with the chickens since I left Chicago last year. We've had fox attacks. We've had multiple deaths. We've had a dog get into the chicken coop from a neighbor and murder a bunch of chickens. I have threatened the life of my neighbor. I have threatened to shoot any dog that comes on the premises. All this while trying to work in a farmer's dog ad. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to play them off of each other, because I love dogs, but if you come on my property, I'm going to shoot you in the head. So it's been a very traumatic couple of months, Charlie, but we made it through. Okay, the chickens are healthy and thriving. We've added some throughout the, you know, the last year.
We were down to three at one point
last year. We were down to three. It was a tough winter. It was like what with the World War II, I don't know my history very well, but it was a tough winter.
Yes.
A lot of losses, but we've recouped literally and figuratively, pun intended.
No pun.
And, you know, greener pastures are on the way. And I'm building a house now, so it's all coming full circle where I'm just like busting my hump. The chickens are doing well. And life is good.
Look at you. All right, good. I had to set that aside before we got onto the serious stuff of talking about the Blackhawks.
Well, let's just talk about last year. Go back to my question.
Okay.
I felt like even though they sucked, everything was moving in the right direction.
Yeah. And we kind of expected last year to be what it was supposed to be. They were in the teardown part of the rebuild. And even last year, you know, we were doing the pre and post games together. And at one point in the season, the Hawks had more money tied up in injured reserve than they did on the active roster. Like they had 9 guys on injured reserve last year at one point. And so they were like, they acquired Rem Pitlick, who was on the first line at one point. Now he's like not even on the radar for it. Like he's still a UFA. And so last season was so dire, not because they were intending to be that bad, but it was just like they kept dealing with injury after injury after injury. And then you see the offseason moves that the Hawks made this summer, and you see Teuvo Teravainen, Tyler Bertuzzi, Pat Maroon, Craig Smith, Ilya Mikheyev, and you're like, all right, all these additions. And in some way, it kind of felt like the Hawks were preparing for the possibility that if they dealt with a situation like that again, where they have a couple guys drop from the lineup due to injuries or whatever, they were better able to be sustained with, you know, not calling guys up from Rockford and then now their guys are playing out of position. It just feels like a total scramble mode. On the other hand, you know, you look at the roster, and when the Hawks did make the coaching change, like the Hawks were dead last in the NHL. And so you're looking at it, you're like, what's going on here? They're dead last in the NHL, but if you look at the underlying numbers, the defensively, the Hawks have been significantly more improved than last year. Like they're middle of the pack when it comes to like expected goals against, all that stuff. The penalty kill has killed off 29 straight in the last 10 games. I mean, they're on a ridiculous run right now. Power play has been in the top 10 for the majority of the season. They went through a little bit of a stretch where it was a 5-game stretch where they had 1 power play in 5 consecutive games, and they didn't do anything with those 5 power plays. So there was a little lull there, but special teams have been great. Defensively, they've been much better. The one area where they haven't been is 5-on-5 scoring specifically. It's a similar rate as last year. And this is what, like, just to like get into the coaching change, like when the Hawks made the coaching change, their 5-on-5 goals per 60, I think, was like 1.9. And last year it was 1.77. And so it's like right there. And so that's where it's like, well, defensively they're improved. They can win those tight games, but they're not getting that one extra goal per game to get that extra point or two. And it's just been a theme for them all season. And hopefully they're starting to turn a corner, but that's kind of been the theme of the season, the lack of 5-on-5 scoring.
Yeah, the last few games, it started with the Rangers win, the Washington comeback win. That was nice. So they are showing signs, the Islanders game, they're showing signs. But going back to your point about last year, I think that falls on, obviously, the GM. He constructs the team. The depth wasn't there. And I feel like when you have the gem that is Connor Bedard, and that's all it is about in Chicago right now, rightfully so. They could care about wins and losses. They don't know. They don't care. As long as we progress Connor Bedard to the next step. So in year 4, 5, 6, this guy is the best player in the NHL. That's all that matters. And last year, even besides all the injuries, Taylor Hall going down, Athanasiou going down, Corey Perry being out of the lineup, all these guys who were supposed to play with Connor Bedard, he still produced. It was an amazing year when you think about who he played with, the points that he put up, and the statistics that he ended the year with, winning the Calder, having all these accolades with all the pressure that comes along with it, all the distractions that came along with it. Guy had a fantastic year. I feel like Kyle Davidson saw that and he's like, I didn't do my job. I didn't do my job last year. I had my guy, like you said, playing with AHLers who aren't even playing hockey this year, for Pete's sake. Like, literally can't even tie in with an AHL team. playing with Connor Bedard last year. So Kyle Davidson goes into this offseason. He goes, my butt's on the line. My opinion, I got to do a better job. I think he did. I think he brought in a lot of guys who can play with them. There's depth around Connor Bedard. He has familiar line mates. It's just strange that it's not translating to 5-on-5 success. What is that? Because usually when you have a good power play, it kind of trickles down to the 5-on-5. You have that chemistry you use to scoring goals, the passing and this and that. Why can't they find that 5-on-5 success, Charlie?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we're starting to see it a little bit more under new interim head coach Anders Sorensen. And one of the things that he's been preaching for his defensemen specifically is we want them to be a little bit more aggressive in joining the rush, but also pinching. And so in the first 25 games of the season, the Hawks had just 4 goals from their defensemen, right? Not great. 2 of them were Seth Jones, and he's out with a foot injury. One of them is Isaac Phillips. He's down in Rockford right now. And the other one was Louis Crevier in those first 25 games. And he's been a healthy scratch for a few games. I mean, he played the last game, but he was for a big stretch. Yeah. He was a healthy scratch. Well, under Sorensen, so I think it's like the last 7 games now, the Hawks have 6 goals from a defenseman. So they're starting to get more contributions from the back end. And I think that can help alleviate some of the pressure from the forwards to feel like it just got to be a 3-man unit. And you know, this well enough, having played both positions, like you understand, like you need a 5-man unit to be, it can't just be the 3 forwards generating offense. But I think part of the 5-on-5 scoring struggles is that, like, it feels like I'm tweeting out a Connor Bedard clip like every game, and it's like, oh, what a setup, but his teammate couldn't finish the play, you know? And it's like, so there's that lack of finish on the Blackhawks. Taylor Hall missed most of last season with the ACL injury. He's had a difficult first half of the little first half season. Now he's starting to come. He had that hat trick against the Dallas Stars right before Thanksgiving. He scored a goal the other day. Like, he's slowly starting to feel himself. Tyler Bertuzzi has been playing much better as of late. I mean, he got off to a very slow start. Teravainen had a start where he had, I think, 7 points in his first 5 games. And then after that, in the 25 games after that, John, he had just 6 points, like 6 points. And now he's coming off back-to-back 3-point efforts. So he's got 6 points in his last 2 games, and he had 6 points in his previous 25. And so they just haven't gotten contributions from the players that they expected to. And I also have to mention this, like, unfortunately, Filip Kurashev has just not been the same player that he was last season. Last year, he was 2nd on the team with 54 points. This year, John, he has 5 total points.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
Pat Maroon has more points than him. And he's been playing Kurashev has been playing in a top 9 role. And Kurashev has a minus 27 rating, which is by far the worst in the NHL. The next worst in the NHL is Roman Josi and Kirby Dach at minus 21. So it's a 6-point gap. And the next worst on the team going into the last game was Teuvo Teravainen at minus 13.
Yeah.
But now it is Tyler Bertuzzi minus 13. That's a 14-point difference. And so, again, plus minus, do with it what you want. But when it's minus 27 and the rest of your teammates are like in the single digits, you know, there's some sort of discrepancy. And so that's been a challenge for him, because Hawks leaned on him to play with Bedard a lot last year, and he just has not been the same player.
Well, he led the team last year, I think, with dash 44. So he's not going to be confused with a Selke trophy winner. The guy's a goal scorer. He gets up and down the ice, and he played well with Bedard last year. But again, I talked about it last year. If you're guy long-term with Connor Bedard is Filip Kurashev, you're not a winning team. Like, Kurashev is a good player. Don't get me wrong, but he's a second, third line guy if you have a Stanley Cup champion team. Okay. Here's a question. Out of all these guys on the Hawks, the top 3 lines, Donato, Bedard, Foligno, you got Bertuzzi, Frankie Nazer, you got Hall, we'll put Teuvo Teravainen, Makiev. Is there anybody who belongs on the Hawks long term to grow with Bedard into the future? Obviously, I think Frankie's there, but is there any of the main guys who are making the big bucks, Foligno, Taylor, Bertuzzi, Teravainen, that you see being with this team 5-6 years down the road?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the 2 staples right now on the Blackhawks roster that are going to be here 5, 6, 7 years from now are Connor Bedard and Alex Vlasic. Connor up front, Vlasic, your guy. I forgot. Favorite player.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I think when you look at the forward group, I think Tara Vinen is one of those guys that he's a perfect get them to the next stage kind of guy, but also a guy that could potentially turn in that 4-year contract into something else. But likely at that stage of his career, he would be more of like a bottom six guy, similar to the role, ironically, that he played on the last great Blackhawks team in 2015, where he was third line penalty killer as a young guy. But as far as the winger to play with Connor Bedard long term, I don't think that player is on the roster yet, because Frank Nazar is ideally, he would be your second line center. Now,
I don't want to cut you off. That's where I disagree, because I'm of the ilk where I like my centerman to be tall, strong, statuesque centerman who can lug the puck, who can go into the corner, who can play those hard minutes. If your two starting centers are Bedard and Frankie Nazar, average height 5'8", I don't think that does it in today's NHL, Charlie. As much as it's fleet footed up and down the ice, I know they tried Bedard on the wing. Do you see that as an issue with the Hawks, where they just, because you're going into these buildings and you're facing centermen like Barkov is 6'3", you got Coke, like the champs got big centers. Is that an issue?
Yeah, no, and that's a fair question. I actually agree with you there. Like if Bedard and Nazar were one and two centers, like for the Blackhawks long term, I almost feel like one of them has to move to the wing. And for me, it's got to be Nazar. It's not going to be Bedard, because that's just the area that he's most comfortable. And I think you can get away with it if you have those elite wingers to play with Bedard down the road. But with Nazar, he's so speedy, so skilled, playmaking type guy, that he could be one of those guys that you can slide over to the right. And it could be kind of like a Patrick Sharp situation down the road, where Sharp played on the wing, obviously a majority of his career, but when he needed to slide into the second line center role in emergency type situations, or maybe take some faceoffs, maybe that's an area where Frank Nazar can slide into that role. But for now, at least, Hawks have, it's like first line center is Connor Bedard, third line center is Jason Dickinson, and they love Jason Dickinson, as a player, but also specifically in that shutdown type third line role. And so they, at no point have they elevated Dickinson to the second line, because they're like, we have to find that guy so no one else is playing out of their position in the lineup. Now, they did experiment Dickinson with Bedard on the same line a few weeks ago when Bedard had that slump, and they're like, let's put Connor on the wing just for a game or two, free him up offensively, because he went 12 games without a goal. And they were like, we got to put the most responsibly defensible center on his line if we're going to make this work. And so it lasted like a game and a half, and then Dickinson went back to his third line. But totally agree with you there. I think they have to, long term, they have to find Connor Bedard's line mates. Here's the problem, John. A lot of the players that the Hawks have drafted in the first rounds over the last couple years, but also like in this past year's draft class, it's just going to take a while for them to get to the NHL. And so that's why sometimes I read some stuff about like what the outside perspective is on the Blackhawks, and it's like, oh.
It starts in November. Christmas catch-up? Let's do diaries. Oh, that clashes with my work, too. That's the day of the nativity. We're booked to see Santa. We're out picking a tree. There's in-laws to visit, pantomimes to see. I've got to write 1,000 Christmas cards. Until somehow, we're here. Four friends having our Costa Christmas catch-up. We should do this more often.
Get together this Christmas around the festive Nutcracker range at Costa. Costa Coffee.
It's dire times in Chicago. And I'm just like, man, I think the Connor Bedard lottery, them winning that lottery, kind of in everyone's minds, everyone thought, okay, rebuild's over. Let's go.
Kickstart. Yeah. Like we're going to win now.
Yeah. And it's almost like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like a lot of these first round picks haven't even sniffed the NHL yet. And they haven't even signed their entry level deals yet. You know, so it's like, it's this weird balance between trying to find the right time to bridge the gap of, okay, when do we start to go for it, but not doing it too soon where you start to ruin the long-term picture because, you know, you just got impatient. So it is this weird balance that the Blackhawks, I'm sure, are trying to find, but credit to the management. It sounds like they understand like this is going to be more of a patient type approach versus, you know, when Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews stepped into this situation, it was like, Keith was there. Seabrook was there. They signed Hosa the next year. Sharp was there. Like, they had all these veterans already in place. And so the infrastructure just has not been there for Chicago that Bedard is stepping into. And I think that's why you've seen them go out and get Foligno, Maroon, all these stopgap type options to just lead them to the next stage of that rebuild, which is in a couple of years, to really take that next step and start to open, slowly open that door of playoff contending.
Yeah, you're not doing what the Buffalo Sabres do, where you get a hint of like, this team's good. Like, we got Tage Thompson, we got Dylan Cousins, we got Owen Power, we got Darlene. All in, baby. Let's go. We're going to spend to the cap. And then you turn around 5 years later, you haven't made the playoffs. You're consistently inconsistent because you haven't developed your young players the way they should develop. So I like what Kyle Davidson's doing. What worries me, it's a results league. And the Hawks are used to winning Stanley Cups. They're used to competing. When I was there, it was champagne and caviar, sure. Like, we were winning, baby. You know, every game, it was just go time. Does there come a point? Because now you've fired Luke Richardson. And what that does is that sets the precedent. Okay, we need to start winning. That's it. We gave him 3 years. There was no progress. Now we start winning. Do you see it coming to a point where all of a sudden, you know, fast forward to next year and you're still in this spot and Kyle Davidson's like, oh crap, my job's on the line. I need to start winning. I don't care about all my first round draft picks. I need to start worrying about my future. And because it's great to have first rounders. You had 3 first rounders last year. You had 3 first rounders in 2022. You had 2 first rounders in 2023. That's all good.
Right.
But until they make the team and then improve and 5 years down the road, they're making an impact. And I know you're not in the meeting rooms. You're not an owner, as far as I know. You're not a president. No, not yet. Do you get that sense like, okay, we fired a coach? Usually a GM gets one coaching change, then they're out the door. Or is it still nice and calm? You're invested in the rebuild.
Yeah. I really wrestled with when they made the coaching change of like seeing it from both sides. Yep. So I'll start there and then kind of move on to the management part. So when Kyle Davidson made the coaching change, if you rewind back to the exit interviews from last season, Kyle Davidson was very clear. He's like, we've finished bottom three in the NHL standings over the last couple of seasons. That is not going to be acceptable for us next year. And so we can't be in the bottom of the NHL. And so whatever it was, 28 games into the season, when they made the coaching change, you look at the record,
and bottom.
John, the record through 28 games this year versus last season is like legitimately identical.
Is it the same? Like, oh, that's funny.
It's almost, I think it's like an overtime loss versus a regulation loss off. Like, that's how close it was. But at the same time, when they made the coaching change, the Hawks had a minus 18 goal differential. But in that time window, they had given up 9 empty netters and had only scored 1 themselves. And so if you eliminate that, the goal differential for the Blackhawks through 28 games was minus 8, which is like very respectable. You know, so you're like, how is this team dead last when they have a goal differential of minus 8? And so when they made the coaching change, I was thinking, okay, it's easy to see what the Hawks saw here. They elevated expectations going into the season. At some point, results have to become a priority. Like, you can't say, hey, we got to be better next year. We can't settle for last place. And then through, you know, 2 months into the season, you're in last place and the fans are like, what's going on here? We thought you were holding ourselves to a higher standard. So I understand it from that perspective. But here's where I'll side with, you know, the potentially Luke Richardson, because, you know, the roster, we talked about how the roster last year, if you think about a lot of the players that played on the Blackhawks last year. So I'm like scrolling through some of the guys that played significant minutes for Chicago last year. Tyler Johnson, what happened to him? He signed a PTO with Boston. He didn't end up signing a deal until later into the season, right? You know, you had Taylor Radish. He was he signed with Washington for like $1 million, 1 year deal. Colin Blackwell, he was a veteran. He signed a minimum deal with the Dallas Stars. And then you look at some like Mackenzie Entwistle, Jared Tenorti, Boris Kachuk, Nikita Zaitsev, Reese Johnson. All those guys are in the AHL or they're overseas now. You know,
it was a garbage team.
Yeah, I mean, I won't go that. But they were very thin. You know, it was a very thin roster. And so this year they make all these additions, and it's almost like, John, we got so used to how thin last year's roster was that it felt like Teravainen and Bertuzzi were like significant upgrades.
All-stars,
and they are. Yeah. But at the same time, I was like, well, those guys are probably better served in more middle six roles than they are on top line roles.
That's
and
so, true.
It's like this real hard balance. And then I've brought up this example a couple times, but the Hawks do these behind the scenes episodes. It's called Every Shift on their YouTube channel. And in the debut episode of this season, season three, they have a camera set up in the coach's room before the season. They're projecting the opening night roster where they got the names on the whiteboard, and yep. It's Luke Richardson. It's the coaching staff, Norm MacIver, Kyle Davidson, the management group. And they're all looking at the roster, like how is everything going to fit? And Blackhawks associate general manager, Norm MacIver, is looking at the whiteboard, and he's like clicking his pen, and he's staring. He's like, where are the goals going to come from? Because if we want to take a significant step forward, we need significantly increase our goal production. So to defend Luke Richardson on some level, I'm not saying he's immune from criticism, but this is where I will side with him. Before the roster even hit the ice for opening day, the Hawks were wondering where the goals were going to come from. And get a load of this, John. So the Hawks scored 179 goals last season. It was the last in the NHL. Mm-hmm. If you added 55 goals to that 179 total, it would give them 234 goals last season. That still would have been fifth worst in the NHL.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like such a like 55 more goals. Like, again, so that's the discrepancy between last year's roster. And like, even if you just added 55 more goals to that roster, they still would have been bottom five in the NHL in that department. So that's why I'll side with Luke Richardson. But at the same time, I think under Anders Sorensen, you're seeing them play a little bit more structured. You're seeing practices are more rigid, more efficient. The guys are competing a little bit harder. And so there has been a benefit to this coaching change. And I think that's where it's been like, okay, how do we put this all into perspective where the Hawks need to show some results moving forward, but at the same time, it is still going to take a couple years for, and that's where I was going to get to the management side. You mentioned at one point, does, you know, Kyle Seek get warm? And I laugh because I'm like, dude, all of the guys that Kyle has drafted, they haven't even sniffed the NHL yet.
Yeah.
And some of the, and this is, and maybe keep me honest on this, because this is where I threw out a Montreal Canadiens example. So Montreal is really struggling right now, right? They're I'm not sure what they're going to do moving forward. Coaching change, I have no idea. But this is what I will say. The difference between the Blackhawks and Canadiens is a lot of the Canadiens players on that roster are going to be, they're going to play significant roles on that next great Canadiens team. So you got Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, Lane Hutson,
Slikovsky. Yeah.
You know, Kirby Dock, Hayden Gooley, Alex Newhook, all these young guys are already in the NHL. So if Canadiens are like, man, we need a different voice to help elevate our group, I think that's fair. But for the Hawks, if you're thinking, oh man, is this rebuild going in a different direction? I'm like, I mean, what were people expecting? Because a lot of the guys that the Hawks have drafted are not even in the NHL yet. And even Artem Levchinov, who signed his entry-level contract, number 2 overall pick, he's down in the minors. So he hasn't even made it to the NHL. So if you told me, hey, Levchinov's here, Korchinski's here, Nazar's now a full-time NHL player, and those guys were hitting developmental stumbling blocks, that's where I'd say, okay, maybe Hawks need to take a step back and be like, are some of these guys that we were expecting to play big roles, are they not developing properly? But by all accounts, like looking at some of the stats the Hawks prospects are putting up, there really isn't anyone that's been like a they've all been progressing nicely. And so that's where I wrestle with, I'm not sure the management group is on a hot seat at all, because all the guys that they've drafted aren't even in the NHL yet.
Well, I think the key thing is developmental improvement. And right. I feel like with the main guy, what I talked about earlier, Connor Bedard, I feel like that's why Luke got fired. That's what it came down to. It seems like Bedard was frustrated. It was spilling over into the game, breaking sticks. And he's always been a passionate guy, but it was noticeable. It was getting picked up. He's slamming doors, breaking sticks, yelling. He's frustrated. That's why Luke got fired, because I feel like the management saw that and they go, we got to take care of this kid. Let's get a new voice into the locker room. a new way to play the game, more aggressive, maybe in the offensive zone, make Connor happy. Do you see a sophomore slump, so to speak, because he went a month without scoring a goal? You could even himself saying, I don't know. I don't know when it's going to go in next. I don't know what's going on. Is it a sophomore slump, or is it more just guys are figuring out how to play Connor Bedard?
Yeah, I think a lot of that is, you know, I mean, if you played the Blackhawks last year, you knew that shut down 98, you're going to win.
Yeah,
you know,
but he still put up 62 points or whatever it was. Like, he still put up points.
Yeah. And so this year, so he went through that stretch. He went 12 games without a goal. And he was the first, if you look at the first half of those games, like the first four or five, he was actually generating like five shots on goal, seven shot attempts, eight shot attempts a game.
Mm-hmm.
But in the second half of that stretch, it was like he went back to back games with zero shots. He had shot attempts where it was like two,
which is unheard of for him.
Yeah. And that's where you start, you know, I'm sure Chicago's start to be like, all right, we're getting a little concerned here because he's not even getting chances anymore. And I think part of that is like Connor did an interview with Hockey Night in Canada in Vancouver after that, his hometown game. And he was talking about how he like, he was basically taking responsibility for the team's struggles. And he was like, man, mentally it's been tough on me this year. And so when you hear that, you're like, wow, this is the first time I've ever heard Connor say, like, show any sign of like my confidence is taking a hit a little bit. And when he scored to snap that 12 game goal drought, he looked straight at the heavens and was like, oh, thank God. Right. And then I don't know if you saw the goal he scored against the New York Islanders last week on the road. He scored. It was just a beautiful goal. Slingshot goes posting in and he goes straight to the glass and he like has his hands up like this.
Oh, he was eyeballing everybody. Yeah.
It's like, oh, he doesn't do that if he doesn't have his swagger back. So yeah. Connor's swagger back is for sure. And did that play a role in the firing of Luke Richardson? Maybe to some degree. But on the flip side, I'm like all the guys the Hawks have brought in, Teravainen, Bertuzzi, Kurashev, Paul McKayev, all those guys have significantly been underperforming. So it's like the guys that they brought in to help take the pressure off of Connor had not been producing. And it's almost like I would look to those guys before I would look to Connor. But I see what you're saying. Like if Connor's not developing, you don't want him to be, you know, you don't want the next 4 months to go by and be like, oh, we're just, it's going to be a bad environment for Connor. Yeah. So maybe there is some truth to that, but I think that has less to do with Luke Richardson and more about the circumstances, if that makes sense.
It doesn't. I feel like it was Luke Richardson's fault, but anyways, I know where your bread is buttered. So we mentioned the youth because that's what this team is looking towards. You get the number two pick last year. You mentioned Levshinov. You got Nazer up. You got Korchinski injured. So he hasn't been around. You got a ton of first rounders coming through the system. Is there one kid who you look at? Because I know you follow the Rockford IceHog, the young kids who are playing overseas or whatever after getting drafted. Is there one kid that you look at, whether it's a Sasha Boysvert, a Marek Vanacker, Oliver Moore, these young guys, a Sam Rinzel? Who's going to be the impact player, do you think, that the Hawks hit on in the first round over the last few years? Or, you know, a second, third, fourth, fifth rounder that is just like a out of the nowhere guy?
Yeah. Defensively, they're assembling a pretty dependable crop. And you mentioned Artem Levshinov, number two overall pick. The goal is for him to be a top pairing player at some point down the road. The guy that's been jumping on my radar as of late, and I'm not sure how much you've paid attention to how great of a season he's having, is Sam Rinzel. The first round pick from a couple years ago, defenseman. He's got 20 points in 20 games in his sophomore season at Minnesota, and that leads all NCAA defensemen. And his package is extremely appealing. Right shot defenseman. John, get your mind out of the gutter. He's laughing. If you're not watching this on YouTube, he made a face. He's 6'5" defenseman, 190 pounds. So it's like 6'5" puck mover. He's legitimately one of the best skaters in college hockey. So it's like if he hits, now you got Levshinov and Sam Rinzel as your two right-hand shot defensemen for the next potentially 15 years. I don't want to go too far ahead of myself, but I think the key to me, John, and probably what you're thinking about is who's going to be that next elite forward to play with Connor Bedard.
Exactly, yeah.
Is it going to be Oliver Moore? Is it going to be Nazar? Is it going to be Sasha Boysvert? Is it going to be one of the guys that they draft this year?
Lucas Reichel.
Another Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to be Reichel. Nick Lardis is having a sensational season in the OHL. He's an elite goal scorer, but he's one of those guys a little bit undersized. I think he's 5'10", 5'11". And so...
Did you say Lardas?
Nick, by the way, he's Greek, so careful with your language.
Well, I didn't hear you. My headphones are a little old. Yeah.
You can't pronounce any Greek name. Athanasiou, whatever. You can't
Lardas?
Pronounce my last name. Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but...
Well, it's just the last name. But anyways, so there is some stuff to look forward to if you're the Chicago Blackhawks fan or anybody involved in the team, because it feels like we need some good news coming out of Chicago. We need some wins, literally and figuratively. So
last thing, John, I'll say, because I know our time is running out here. Mm-hmm. But so the Hawks have played 32 games this season.
Yes.
In 31 of them, they've either led, tied, or trailing by one in the third period in every single game. So they have been competitive. This isn't games over by the second period. This is like going down to the wire, and the Hawks are finding ways to lose and not pick up points. So it's like, if you look at some of those games, and if you add like 6 or 7 more points to this Blackhawks in some of those games that they ended up with zero, Hawk could very well be closer to a playoff spot than the bottom of the NHL standings. That's how weird the West has been this year.
And that's where I thought they were going to end up at the end of the year. I thought they were going to be a bubble team come playoff time, but it just hasn't worked out for them. But anyways, I appreciate the in-depth analysis, Charlie. Is there anything you want to push? You want to plug anything?
No, I'm okay. I just want to say I miss you. I hope you're doing well. Good to see the iconic headphones are still in play for this podcast, and hope we could do it again soon.
Maybe I'll be in Chicago one day. Who knows?
You won't hit me up.
My number hasn't changed, everybody. Find me. But anyways, Charlie Romeliotis, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it. Check him out in Chicago if you're there.
Right, thanks, anyway, thanks, have a Jonathan good one. Scott. Yeah.
Cheers, everybody.
It starts in November. Christmas catch-up? Let's do diaries. Oh, that clashes with my work, do. That's the day of the nativity. We're booked to see Santa. We're out picking a tree. There's in-laws to visit, pantomimes to see. I've got to write 1,000 Christmas cards. Until, somehow, we're here. Four friends having our Costa Christmas catch-up. We should do this more often.
Get together this Christmas around the festive Nutcracker range at Costa. Costa Coffee.